Welcome to the Nerd Party.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
And this is City Alpha 3.
City Alpha 3, a Star Trek podcast here on the Nerd Party. I'm your host the week, Philip Gilfus, joined by my two co-hosts, Darren Moser and Daniel Prue. And gentlemen, we're going to talk something that we're all a little experts about, and that's Earth.
Yes, Earth. I thought one of us was getting promoted today, Philip. We were going to have that discussion
offline. Darren,
are you okay. a secret Earthologist, Darren? Earthophile? Terraphile?
You know,
what do we call ourselves if we're such...
Look, Earth first is what I'm going to say.
No. Uh-oh, and, this is getting off the rails. Let's cut it, guys. Just cut it.
Of course, we're going to be talking
maybe
about...
the moon. Okay, maybe the moon too, but at least the Earth.
Yes, we're going to be talking about the latest episode of Star Trek Discovery, People of Earth, Episode 3, Season 3. We'll probably go off on a kind of separate topic and not talk the episode the whole time, but maybe we will, maybe we won't. We're an unpredictable group. So let's just jump into it, kind of broad strokes. You know, this is the third episode.
The gang's back together.
But it's so different. It's so different.
I have to slightly admit I was both right but mostly wrong. And, you know, I always want to admit when I'm wrong. Because I said, this third episode is just going to be the Michael flashback. It's the whole episode. It was 5 minutes.
That was the teaser, basically.
But anyway, so, Daniel, what'd you just think of this episode, broadly speaking?
It was okay. I was surprised at there wasn't as more answers than I was expecting. I know it's early on and I should have known better, I suppose. It just felt weird. It felt almost like anticlimactic, like thinking Earth was going to be a big part of whatever story they were telling, and it seems that it's not. It just isn't. It just feels like another planet. I'm just surprised, I guess. I wasn't expecting that. Saru continues to be awesome, and I love Saru.
That's Captain Saru.
I was about to say,
but
it's like President.
The rest
Bartlett.
Of it is like hit or miss. So it's okay. It's fine. It's okay.
Mm-hmm. Darren, I
think Saru was the highlight of this episode. I really liked him finally getting his due. Finally, not being acting captain, but actually captain. And, it helps when like 98% of the command structure above you has been destroyed, but we all feel that he deserves it. And he really shows that he deserves it in this episode because, is it the A or the B plot or whatever, but basically mitigating the discussion between the Earth Defense Force and the attacking raiders in a very Starfleet way, very much like I was having a lot of TNG flashbacks of like delegates sitting around the conference table and there's a couple of PowerPoint presentations going on and, you know, we just need to work it out and, oh, they're human. I'm shocked. It was good. But like Daniel said, it painted more, filled in more of the blanks, but there was still a lot. Like, I didn't expect that. Oh, yeah, sorry, this isn't the heart of the Federation anymore. They packed up and moved, and it's vacant now. So it's like, oh, okay. So do we just get in Spock shuttle now and follow it over to the Federation place?
But not only are they metaphorically looking for the Federation, now they're literally looking for the Federation. So. It's a double finding. I guess it does, you know, we'll find out. I know. But like, I'm like, Vulcan, right? It's got to be Vulcan, right?
I didn't even think of it, honestly. I didn't. I guess it could be.
Not really.
Well, it might even be Trill, for all we know at this point.
Well, spoiler alert, that's next episode.
Which is good. That's where we're going this week, so.
Yeah. But anyway, let's just stay in here for a moment there. Daniel, I know you're often not surprised by Discovery. Were you surprised that they were humans? Bad guys.
I guess I didn't see it coming. It didn't feel like a surprise so much as just like that's you know what? I kept getting Shellyak vibes from those aliens, and it's too bad they're not really aliens, because I kind of like the design a lot, but it's just their space.
That's uncomfortable
for a human to hold. Really, yeah, for sure. But if they had a big bug alien head, then they could fit in there just fine. I was more upset, and I didn't really look this up afterwards, but I wanted to talk about it. Did they say they were from Titan? Did they keep saying the word Titan, as in the moon of Saturn, Titan?
Yeah, like a colony orbiting
but
it.
But communications still work. Long-range sensors still...
No, they lost their communications, is what they said.
Yeah, digital communications are powered by dilithium.
Okay.
Well, they said there was they had lost communication. And then when they showed up, and before they could hail, I guess, they were shot at and thus decided
to
take
their ball
home. But
the suggestion is that in our solar system, there's a whole lost colony. That feels crazy to me. That feels crazy that that's feasible.
Apparently, Earth doesn't go outside, like, Mars orbit.
It's like
or something.
Saying, like, you know, if all, I don't even know how you would make an analogy out of this. If the internet shut down and you were in New York City and you couldn't reach people in Pennsylvania, well, you'd probably just go check it out, or you'd call them. You could make a phone call or build a telegraph.
New York first. We got to close off these borders.
You would think that the whole system would still be heavily colonized and definitely would be able to communicate to each other. That doesn't even at the speed, even if it was half the speed of light, even now we could communicate between those. Anyway, sorry. Those stupid details bother me so much. I don't know why they do. They shouldn't.
Well, one thing I thought about, and I'm not going to go too deep into this. I know y'all might want to, but I'm not. I'm just mentioning this casually that, you know, when they approach Earth, I was expecting something. I'm like, oh, we're space talk. I'm like, oh, well, of course, it exploded, you know, whatever. But I'm like, there still should be something. Like, satellites aren't dilithium run, or, you know what I'm saying? There should be something spinning around that planet. Well, I guess there was. It was
defense.
The
force field
shields,
generators and the attackers.
Yeah.
So. Well, and I mean, they did say, oh, we thought the colony was lost or something like that. But I see. I know what you're saying, Daniel. There, it was like you kind of the more you think about it, the more you're like, boy, they sure had an answer to everything on why they didn't communicate with the colony inside the solar system.
Yeah, I mean, this is 1,000 years in the future. It's really hard to like push on that. Like this, you got to think about this kind of stuff.
Where's
the
lunar
colony?
The
moon.
Yeah, the moon.
If a shuttlecraft, if one of its Discovery shuttlecrafts fell out of the back of the ship, it would still be able to communicate with Earth instantaneously. And that's 1,000-year-old tech. Why is this scenario feasible? That's why I couldn't understand if they were talking. Maybe the colony is just called Titan and it's further out. Maybe. I don't know. I didn't look it up. I'm like, they're talking about Titan.
I'm still wrapping my mind around.
It's like, not the planet. It's like, you're from Titan. Oh, the planet? No, the colony. Oh.
You mean like over there? We literally just passed it on the way in.
It's like I'm from London. I'm from London, Canada, not London.
Hollywood, Florida,
UK.
Where I'm from.
Yeah. We stopped there snacks on the way into Earth, and they're just fine, man.
It's the last dilithium gas for like 10,000 light years. You got to stop there. Well, and I was still kind of wrapping my head around like the way Burnham and Book were acting, because in this future, apparently, like for them to normally get from wherever they were, which we still don't even know, but it's over there. We'll never go there again. But now we're at Earth, which is apparently a long distance away. So these raiders don't even know who we are. Like it was just, I was still trying to wrap around like where we were and what was going on.
I just like how the soul system is just like, the bad part of town. Like, nobody goes over to the souls. Like, that's way over. Nobody goes way over there. You know.
But I didn't even know where here was. So that's why I didn't know where there was. Guys,
no matter where you
Star
go.
Trek is built on maps and technical blueprints. And I have received neither in a long time. I'm missing them.
Well, you brought up, not to skip around, so stop me if you want to talk more, but you brought up Booker and Michael. And, you know, as we said, we got the flashback such as it was.
Which I'm glad Book put on that uniform, then he never spoke to a Earth Defense Force person in the entire
time. It didn't matter at
time,
all. The next scene was him taking it off. It was totally pointless.
I mean, it felt like all those scenes were to imply a possible relationship for them, which is fine. Like, that could be where they're going, but they're being real subtle about it for, like, No, but I mean, not subtle, but I mean, like, at this rate, it's going to happen in, like, the season finale in, like, 8 more episodes. Like, it's going to take forever.
You would think living in close quarters
For
a year would have definitely sparked, if there was going to be something. And here's the thing, guys.
Maybe the cat is just a big mood killer. I don't know.
Here's the thing. Michael basically went to college. It was her freshman year in college, and she's so different than she was a year ago. She's totally changed.
Are you saying Discovery are high school friends? And
you
like,
wouldn't understand her now. She's into new
These
stuff.
Are my friends from work. And then I went away to college, and now they want
it's
me
like,
back.
I just don't feel right there, man.
The Federation
I don't
fell.
Go back. I can't go back, man. Like, it's like she acts like she. I just don't understand like this plot line. It feels like forced drama for no other reason. I mean, I guess that's a TV show is forced drama, but it just feels silly to me.
Well, I guess a question I'll pose is, you know, like I said, I was wrong. The whole episode was not a flashback, but the Michael Cleveland, I like the really, you know, backstory. Like the whole episode is them like, oh, I'm making stuff up. I don't remember. Remember Cestus 7? Oh, I mean, it's like they're all in you know,
it's like what A Team or all any of those shows where they're all like, oh, we're
leverage.
Gonna, yeah, we're
I'm
gonna do
leverage.
A, oh,
yeah.
It's so leverage. It's like, oh, we're gonna do a Paddywhack number 2. Oh my gosh, I remember that. It's
yeah,
like,
let's do it with a curveball.
Oh, how could you say such a thing that I won't explain or reference to the audience?
Would you all have wanted to see more of what happened last year, or do you like this? Just we're gonna reference a year and how it changed us. Do you prefer telling or showing?
I don't know because at the it's just weird because at the end of the episode, I mean, she has that moment with Saru where it's like, okay, we still need to trust each other, but I got to work through some stuff, but I'm going to put the uniform on and be your number one. So nothing really changed. Like, I don't know. Like, I would almost be like, I was expecting to say, I can't put that uniform back on right now. And I would have been okay with that because, like, that would have meant something happened in that year that, you know, how she feels about the choices she's made. But she did, and that's not a big
weird,
deal
right?
anymore.
It's like,
so
if you want to go down that path, and like, there's that scene between Tilly and Michael. And Tilly's like, you let us go. And I'm like, I mean, sure, yeah, it's been a year. But it's only been a year, meaning she could still care and also have kind of let it go a little bit.
Time is different in the future, Daniel. A year is like an eternity.
So if she let go of like the idea of the Federation, like that would make sense to me.
Or if ever seeing her friends
again.
Because like, because she doesn't.
But she wouldn't
know when
she wouldn't have that like fraud feeling like when she's there or doesn't feel like home. They're acting like she went through some traumatic event, which somehow changed her. But they're being really vague about it. And she's not being clear on what it was. And it's like, okay, well, this is, I don't know what to tell you.
Well, and does this mean like for the rest of the season, is it going to be Saru giving the orders and then Burnham like clarifying, oh, but in this situation, in this time, you can't actually talk first and shoot later. It got to be backwards because
she's the Matt Decker to his Admiral Kirk.
Oh, you have to nursemaid me through this, this time. No, that's a great Star Trek analogy because that would be awesome if I just don't feel I don't know if they're gonna make the character embrace that because again she put the uniform back on and it's kind of like she's lockstep back into Starfleet.
I was thinking more that she was the Neelix of the show. That she's somewhat familiar with the terrain.
But is she? Because she's never been to Earth. She's never been to this corner. This is halfway across the galaxy as far as we know from where she was.
Yeah, as you said, to imply, and maybe we were just reading into it, but it, like I said, it's implied the reason you know why this feels so strange is that she went through stuff, as we said. But like it has to be more than just acclimating to the future. Like, did she make some perilous decisions?
I got the feeling, acclimating, but it's a hopeless future, or a future that has lost hope because of the falling of the Federation. Like, that's kind of the in-between the lines that I was gleaning, like, and because she has that impassioned plea where she's like, this is not, you know, I promised us we'd have a future, but not this one, you know, so let's work to make it better.
Also, and I don't mean to harp on it, obviously, you know, ongoing issues about me in this series, but like at the beginning where she's presumably sending this message to Discovery, nobody would really send this message, right? I mean, like, you know, you want to be like she's very hard on her sleeve about the way she talks to, like, whoever gets this message, like, we were supposed to be in and what we hope for. And I'm like, can you just...
I felt like it was a log that she was recording, and then she had, like, a standard message she sent, like, USS Discovery on channel, blah, 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 please respond, you know, on repeat.
I don't know. Sometimes they really lean into the voiceover, and not that I'm an expert. Look, they have a TV show. I don't...
Maybe it was the eighth signal that was the Discovery, but...
But yeah. I've always thought that voiceover, at times, can be a lazy device. And I'm not, you know, but I'm just saying, I don't know. But
let's
again,
talk about the Earth Defense Force, though. That was kind of cool.
What about the Mars Defense Force? Oh, we didn't see that.
Oh,
okay, yes.
I mean, you can't really say too soon. It's been like 1,000 years.
The EDF was built on the bones of the MDF.
Oh, God.
What it could have been, had they gotten
but
the
sad,
resources.
It's, was there like a Martian colony, too? And they're just like, okay, so we'll combine resources. Sorry, we don't recognize your government. Earth Defense Force, wall up. Sorry. Sorry, we have this entire planet of resources we can't share with you. So, sorry, Mars. We never forgot how you failed us in the year 22-something-something with the Borg.
And then we kind of fried your atmosphere. Actually, I guess how long do they, I mean, I don't answer this question, Dan.
How long does it take for Mars to regrow the atmosphere after they burn it?
Yes. Anyway, they may all just still be dead for all we know. All right, but anyway, yeah. So all right, well, let's talk Earth Defense Force or whatever it's called. Yeah. So Earth.
Yeah,
sucks.
Earth Defense Force.
We don't know. We don't know because we only meet two people.
Right. Earth government sucks.
Space.
It felt like, what is it? It felt like Monty Python, where they're like, oh, what Federation is there in that planet? Oh, we don't have a Federation in that planet. Oh, we're a non-bipartisan commune that does, you know, voting by two-thirds majority on inside solar system matters, and, you know, bipartisan matters on the external, on a rotating bi-weekly basis. And they're just like, so the Federation's not here. Okay.
So it's not here. Like, that is the crux of the episode, though. It's not there. So we see a tree, and then we don't get any other details about how Earth is, how it functions, who's on it, who's in charge.
I told you it's a bipartisan commune where they do their you're absolutely right. Like, they told us enough and gave us like a shore leave moment, and now it's like, well, are we ever going to see Earth again? I honestly doubt it at this point because it has nothing for us.
We showed it. Tick. Moving on.
Tilly hugged a tree. Isn't that enough for you people? Sure.
And the Golden Gate Bridge was still there. That's all
that
we needed to know. It's not like they wouldn't have rebuilt it. It's obviously iconic.
No. I mean, no, but I'm like... Again,
how else are you
going
to get from one side to the other? Is everyone going to just go walk around with a personal transporter to get to the other side of the bay? That's just preposterous, Philip. Obviously, you need a bridge.
America's a bad example because we're relatively a young country. So, I mean,
look, after World War V, they didn't want to rebuild the bridge again. So they.
I'm just saying,
it's a hologram.
I would believe that. That'd make more sense. I mean, the solar panels are still there from Picard. But like, yeah, I mean, you know, I would have to go to the more eastern part of the world, and which I'm not uber familiar with India and China. But like, what structure would still be around in 1,000 years?
Pyramids.
They're getting kind of old now, Darren. Yeah. They're a little dusty.
But we're not using them. Yeah.
You know. I'm just saying, like, they've lasted, like, at least 2,000 years or more than that as of now. So add another 1,000. That's,
I mean,
like,
to
nothing
be fair, yeah,
to them.
To Darren's point, I would argue that, like, anything that people care about would stay. Like, they would just
right.
keep rebuilding.
That's true. But, or yeah, they'd rebuild. Yeah, they'd have, like, a Renaissance era, and they're like, oh, we should rebuild this and this and this. And then they do it because they have the programmable matter.
Different?
To have what look different?
Shouldn't it look different?
Oh, no. If they're going for authenticity.
Okay, maybe they didn't use the right Pantone on the, you know, on the bridge, but
we'll never know. It's just a thing in the back of my mind when I'm watching Discovery now. Like, all of this stuff, like, for instance, like, whenever Discovery gets attacked, like, they should last 5 seconds.
And yeah, they should be dead. It's like phaser technology. It's like, it should be like the Enterprise D going up against the NX-01. It should just obliterate it in about 3 seconds.
Yeah, that one torpedo hit should have blown them apart. Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, I did like that just being...
And that wasn't even from a ship. That was from an orbital defense platform that's defending a planet. Yeah. I honestly, like, if they don't have something in the next episode or two where they get some sort of upgrade...
Yeah, I don't know why that... Yeah.
Like, it doesn't make it... Then it's not going to make any sense when they attack anybody.
You would think Michael would be like, hey, look at this ship that has a cloaking device on it. Let's start taking and ripping technology out of it and applying it to Discovery.
That's true. And they don't even bat an
eye at the cloaking
device.
You're not going to last for 3 seconds in this time without doing something to upgrade your stuff.
Well, yeah, and they need a better shield, better weapons. They need to be able to cloak their dilithium.
Well, and they don't even need their dilithium. Commodity. The thing is, once, and I'm sure the episode's going to address it because it seems like the whole season's tailor-made for it. But once they, like, the secret of Discovery gets out that it can just warp around places without dilithium, it's going to be a target for everything. Like, that's going to be the whole point of the series. So, like, yeah, you already now have a leg up on everybody in terms of navigation transport, but you need to get...
They could actually be the best couriers. Yeah. They could be like, you want it in 30 minutes or less? I mean, give it to me, because we'll be there in like a second. But no, you're right. It'll totally paint a target.
Or
on
if we're
back.
Really talking, we're really talking like Federation concepts and the hopefulness for the future, they should just share their technology. But that's not going to happen.
The temporal prime directive,
but it's all old technology.
Cannot...
It doesn't. I mean, except for the spore drive.
Yeah.
All their technology is.
I'm talking
is
about
out
the spore drive.
Date.
It's literally the thing that could transform the entire 33rd century.
Or they just gonna clone a bunch of Stamets?
It looks like this little Trill.
Maybe we could do that nowadays. I don't know.
They probably could. And this little Trill kid looks like she might take up the mantle. I bet. That's what I'm betting. They're planting the seeds for here.
Oh.
So, yeah, let's talk Adira, who is our newest cast member for however long it's going to be.
Admiral Trill.
Which I, you know, as soon as it was over, I'm like, I know how, I haven't looked. Half the internet's like, it's got to be Dax. And I'm like, it's not Dax. We know it's not
Dax. No, it doesn't
Dax.
Have to be Dax. That
no, but I'm saying that's, you know, that's what people are going to say. Like, oh, there's a Trill. It has to be that. But anyway, but what would you think of the revelation? Daniel, you're our resident Trill admirer, though probably just the host of that. what'd you think about that revelation? Because I didn't know that. I don't think that was leaked or anything. That was a Trill character.
Yeah, I think I might have seen something about it, but that's good. That's smart. That's a really good way to use built-in canon for something that, like, oh, this person remembers. Of course, it seems like they're setting up a block or something, like because it's a human host.
Human Trill.
And that made me think, and I couldn't remember specifically. I'm like, I don't think they can do that, but maybe they did it in a couple of episodes
Riker?
For like a
Riker
for a very
did
short
it.
Amount of time.
Right? I would think within 1,000 years, like, it's not ideal, but it's possible.
So whatever. That's fine. I'm not actually fussed about that. Yeah. That's cool.
But like you said, the mental block, like, that's actually really smart, having a character now that has maybe 1,000 years of knowledge. They just can't access it. Because then that solves all your problems.
So I would love
gotta keep that block.
Just to briefly project into the future, what I think would be cool is if when they go to Trill next episode, if a lot of those characters are the Trills that we know, like the same symbionts, but obviously different hosts. And we, like, maybe we'll see Dax, or maybe we'll see these other ones.
That would be cool if they dropped the Dax for that. Like, not the one that's on the ship with them, but, like, is in
the
city of
Trill. Whatever, the Council of Trill.
I feel bad for the Trill, because I feel like the name of their species, like, what's your language? Trill. What's your planet? Trill. What's your species? Trill. Like, what's the city named? Trillopolis. Like, it's, you know, it's something. I don't know.
I mean,
just,
we're from Trill, but not
we're not
Trill.
Those Trill.
Yeah.
It's like New York, New York. It's like Trill, Trill of Sector Trill.
It's like Titan Colony. That's what it's like.
Oh, gosh.
So, Darren, do you think that this is a better explanation that if they had made Wesley Crusher a Trill, that would explain why there's a brilliant 17-year-old? So now we have our resident Wesley now.
No,
on Discovery.
He could be a brilliant 17-year-old. Yeah, no, well, and that's true. We don't know how much. I would assume that the character we've been introduced to, the majority of their talents are actually coming from themselves. If their memory is blocked from the Trill, like, or not being able to access it in a perfect way, you know, I'd like to give the benefit to the person that, you know, it's not just like they were nothing until the symbiont showed up.
If only we had a series that delved very deeply into those very topics. Oh, wait, you can go watch Deep Space Nine. There's lots of episodes about that. You can go watch it right now. It's great.
But yeah, no, I think that'll be interesting. You know, maybe she'll have like Trill flashbacks and we'll get more of stuff like that. And
she could have her Trill ceremony. I forget what it's called. And then we could have
all our
cast,
the joining or something.
Well, and then we could have all our cast members of Discovery get to play all the previous hosts.
Ooh, that would be
acting,
cool.
From, you know, that we haven't seen.
Saru's like her mother and is like brushing her hair.
Exactly.
Her 7 foot tall.
You know, you'd have to get Stamets would have to be that Quark role of like the most honestly, humiliating, but like out of character.
Most effeminate male. Yeah.
Well, no, not. But just, you know, something unlike, you know, he's not usually touchy feely, you know,
right,
caring.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that ceremony where they get to touch on their previous host.
The gymnast, know. Somebody would be the murderer. Yeah.
Some would be the murderer.
Michael, obviously.
Or if they're stupid, they'd put her in Georgiou. It's like, why? Why did you do this?
So that, you know, not to give anything short shrift, but that's more or less what I wanted to cover from episode itself. So any final thoughts or points or anything else before we kind of go into expansion mode, Darren, people of Earth?
Yeah, no, it's, I think, I mean, looking back on it, you know, we had one episode with Michael, one episode with Discovery, and now this is the together, and they're functioning well. So I think I have to try to remember that, you know, yeah, we can look back at previous seasons of Discovery and it all makes sense, but, you know, it still feels weird watching like week to week Star Trek where we don't know all that's going to happen or all the back history. So I know we'll get to there, but I think it'll be interesting. I think as long as they stay away from any connection to either trying to get back or something from season 3, I think we need a clean break and we just go from there. So none of this Detmer rumors of lingering control. I don't want any of that. You know,
you brought it up. And I actually was going to ask you that before, if you didn't. What'd you think of the Detmer 5 seconds of she's still traumatized and we're ignoring it and we're not going to delve into
it? I mean,
yet.
I don't necessarily feel that they're ignoring it. I feel that they're going to, within the next episode or two, that's going to come to a head and that's going to be like she's going to degrade even more. And yes, in a perfect Starfleet world, like they would have dealt with it sooner. But, you know, also in story time for the Discovery crew, it's been like a matter of days. Like it hasn't been that long. So
in 1 week since we said, oh,
but yeah, so now I feel like eventually that's going to come to a head. She's going to have another episode where she's like either going against orders or upset about something. And they're going to be like, oh, we need to deal with this to help our friend. And I think they will. And And hey, props for Starfleet for using PTSD. And I mean, they've done it before with Ash, but we can do it in a different way and help work through that. That'd be interesting to see.
Maybe they'll avail themselves of the 33rd century counselor technology since they didn't have any in the 23rd century.
That's true.
So, Daniel, any final thoughts about People of Earth?
I think it's a pretty bold choice to name it People of Earth when there's only three. But hey, you know, I will say, like I said, I'm disappointed that we didn't learn anything really significant about Earth or what the conditions are like on Earth or what the situation's like on Earth, or even if Earth is worth saving. I mean, the tree's still there, I guess. I don't. Maybe Boothby's still there. I don't know.
Again,
Dino.
What tree is still there? Like, I mean, I know trees, but you know what I'm saying? In the developed world, such as it is, and
it's funny because you look at pictures of like Starfleet Academy, quote unquote, from out like the matte paintings. You know, there's not a tree there the entire time. You know, of course, but
it's the only organism that would live that long on Earth. So they had to put some because like they comment when they get to it. Oh man, you know, everything else is different here. Well, everything else would be different. There wouldn't be a tree. That's the only thing feasible.
A thousand years.
It's the only thing possible that you could put there that you'd be like, oh, well, that, I guess they could put a turtle there, like a tortoise, some sort of, or like a,
our old school mascot, Torty the Tortoise.
Shelly's still there.
But like anything else would be long gone at that point. So I guess, anyways, so I'm a little disappointed about that, but you know, onward. The train rolls and we continue moving forward, I suppose.
Yeah, the other, and you know, of course, I've complained about more stuff. The more that gets to me, I really hope, and of course, I'm saying this in a very complaining way, I hope that Georgiou's spinoff just happens because I don't want her there anymore. Like, I'm sure there is cool stuff she can do, but I think what bothers me the most about her, and again, you know, Discovery, as always, not my favorite, but there are good scenes. There are good scenes or something they're trying to do in Discovery. But she always has to have the smart aleck comment that then breaks the tone of the scene. Like, you know, it's like the Orville season one or something. Like, you can't do a straight scene, you gotta have a joke. It's like with Georgiou, you know, we're doing something, she's like, whoa, and we're like, okay. Whatever.
Yeah.
Let's all pay attention to Georgiou, guys.
Yeah, well, and now that I think about it, like, they didn't avail themselves of, like, hey, what's happened in the last 1,000 years? Like, do I have any descendants, you know, that are alive? Like, there's none of that. It's just like, okay, Earth doesn't. I mean, maybe they didn't have time to go to the library.
Well, they had time to visit the tree. So you would think that the library would be nearby.
Daniel, that was for secondary cast only.
Sorry.
All right. Well, something I wanted to more broadly talk about, as we sort of talked about at the beginning, was Captain Saru's diplomacy.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to talk about the sort of the captains of diplomacy and maybe talk about who we think are, I don't say the best, but like, you know, what do we think of the various Starfleet captains?
I was going to say, they all have their moments.
Yeah.
Like, I'd rather, rather than trying to rank them,
well,
I'd try to think of like specific instances.
Real clickbaity. We can do it for sure.
Well, and I wanted to start off with my... And we
who's the best
up.
Captain and why is it Picard or something like that?
And we can round robin this, but the person I wanted to start with is, I think, arguably the best diplomat. And I know when I say that, you all are thinking what you just said, but I would argue to me...
Animated series Kirk. Okay,
he's
going to
say Archer.
I don't understand. No.
Is Captain Jonathan Archer, who literally built the Federation... I mean, you know...
Because he didn't have a sense of primish guidelines to follow. Some sort of document that was so important. Is directive too far? Yeah, let's not call it that yet.
Because I think what we see in the People of Earth episode, which is, I would argue, a little simplistic, but it's fine, is basically what Archer comes down to, you know, especially in season four, but throughout the whole series, of him just like being faced with the aliens, whether it's the Andorians or the Tellarites or whoever, and just being like, hey, let's all work together, guys. We got a common threat, whether it's the Zindi, whether it's the Romulans. We didn't know it was wrong. You know, the mysterious species, you know, like that's just him being, and you know, this is the Star Trek thing, him being the human. You know, we got to work together. Let's concentrate. Let's not be petty. And I just thought, like, I mean, that's what Saru was doing. But I think I'd argue that Archer tends, I think, to be, like, even though that's not where he comes from, he's not a trained diplomat, pilot. But I think he does pretty good, obviously.
Yeah, I will always defend Captain Archer. I love that it's so funny that it comes from basically that computer readout screen of Inamir Darkly that we find out he's that he's going to be the Federation, the first Federation president, and it's like it works really well for his character and like that idea that he helped push that forward really, I think, works. And I part of the reason I think that, of course, it's because Scott Bakula is a very charming man. He's very great. But he also, the captain himself, works because he's forced to sort of improvise in this situation, in this sort of untamed, you know, west of the stars. That he has to go out there and...
A wagon train to the stars, as it were?
You know, he has to go out there and he has to form relationships
And he doesn't have the best ship. Like, often he goes up against bigger and better ships, and he... Yeah,
I think he has fantastic diplomatic skills for sure.
Yeah.
Something small like founding the Federation. I mean, I guess that's
signing the charter. Okay. Yeah, that
she can put it on his resume, but like it only takes
me about
up one line.
Commercial treaty you helped with. Wow, really? You didn't build the Federation, did you?
We all know if Picard was founding the Federation, he'd be like, I nominate the Griselda to... No.
All right. Well, Darren, what about you? What captain do you want to talk about, their diplomatics?
Oh, gosh. Well, let's talk about Janeway next, because I think also in a similar vein to Archer, where through necessity, like, she doesn't have Starfleet backing her up, and she has to, you know, they say it in the pilot where she's like, you know, we'll make new allies and gain new technology and find our way home. Like, they have that singular mission that they ignore many times to go explore, but that's okay. But but she, you know, I mean, from the very beginning where she puts her foot in the, you know, with the Kazon and the Okampan, and she sets a nice precedent for their crew for the rest of their time in the Delta Quadrant.
The Janeway Doctrine?
Yeah, messing with time, as no big deal, you know. But, you know, there are other times where...
The Borg?
Yeah, she brokers peace with the Borg. I mean, who would have thought that that was
almost
possible?
Almost no one before
then. I
mean, then.
Granted, she gets... I mean, granted, she gets assimilated for a while, so I mean, but I guess that's just, like, hazards of diplomacy. But, I think she's very diplomatic and she's kind of it for the diplomacy, really, on the Voyager crew. Like, I can't
the
really
Q continuum.
Yeah. The stops a war, supernova war. I'm thinking
my
of,
favorite 70s band.
Well, and just other times where it could just be little somethings where she's getting technology or a piece of something they need. And obviously they're not going to, like, give away replicators to every single, you know, rest stop in the Delta Quadrant. But, you know, she has to make sure she doesn't alienate everybody. Now, granted, you know, some planet's history of the Voyager incident encounter isn't the best, as we learn, you know, from the Doctor. But for the most part, I think she's a great diplomat and, you know, is... Her style works for her situation.
Now, I in no way want to suggest that this is a metric for how diplomatic a captain is. But I'm just curious, how often did we see Janeway in her dress uniform? I had to look it up because I remember kind of vaguely seeing it. She looks like she does it when she's promoting people.
The whole ship is a dress uniform. They're the only representatives of the Federation.
I said no.
Now I'm asking, wait, when was it, Daniel? Because I don't know, like, other than, like, if someone got married or something.
Yeah, I see when she's, looks like she's pinning the Doctor. That might have been his fantasy episode?
Ceremony.
Oh, when he's getting his ECH upgrade or
something? Know, but I'm trying to remember.
Oh, award ceremony,
I'm trying
maybe.
To remember any other time. Anyways, that's not a big deal, of course, because obviously...
No, it's not a bad idea.
Well, she didn't pack one on the mission. Well, she didn't think she'd be needing it.
Replicators, sorry. What was that?
No, we have to save power, Darren, at least in season one.
Watch or dress uniform, which do I save?
What about you, Daniel? What captain do you want to put under the microscope?
I mean, of course, I'm sure we'll talk about Picard at some point, so I'll skip over the easy one. I will...
Which series?
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. I will say, while we don't think of Sisko generally, his main... basically, the edict that Picard gives him is one of diplomacy. His main arc from the first episode to the last, almost... is a diplomatic mission. It is to prepare the Bajorans, although of course it, you know, for entry into the Federation. And that is, I mean, that's a very specific, very narrow, but of course he goes all over the place and becomes a god or whatever.
Becomes a religious leader.
Then then there's the wormhole and the Dominion and, you know, it gets a little sidetracked.
And becomes his mother.
We won't talk about that. And while I would never argue that he is the strongest diplomat by any means, he had diplomatic chops. There's no doubt. So he
knew when to punch a cue and when not to.
He was the, you know, speak softly and carry a big stick. And then sometimes yell weirdly at people. But, like, he knew what he was doing.
You betray the uniform!
Well, I think what you could sort of turn it a little bit. I mean, it's still diplomacy, even in wartime, building your alliance. That's what he was good at. I mean,
bringing the Romulans into the war.
Maybe not that particular example so much, but...
Early seasons with the Maquis, like, they dealt a lot with that. And that's a whole, like, know your enemy, know yourself kind of like... Because the Maquis are Federation citizens. Like, that's a different flavor of bad guy of the week, in quotes, you know. So he had to deal with that in a lot of different ways.
And even diplomacy is even dealing with your adversaries. And, I mean, who else would you want dealing with the Cardassians but Ben Sisko? You know, he's going to be tough, but still be a Federation representative.
Yeah, I would argue, I mean, we see Jellicoe really competently handling the Cardassians. But
that's
I would
true.
Say that, generally speaking, you want somebody who's a bit more less ruffled, more tougher.
Maybe not Maxwell. He kind of was more of a shoot first, ask questions later.
You need somebody with Cardassian that, captain, the quiet reserve, but the strength behind the eyes to deal with the Cardassians. And I think Dukat is a perfect foil for, at least sometimes, most of the time, a perfect foil for Sisko in that the give and take. And that is a lot of diplomacy right there. And it's really interesting who has the power, who's holding, you know, what against whom. And he's very deft at handling a lot of that stuff.
Well, and it's interesting you bring up Dukat, Daniel, because really, unless I'm forgetting something, like, Sisko's the only one who kind of has that opposing foil through the majority of the entire series. Like, I mean, granted, you know, Picard is like Tomalak and a couple others, and Janeway has, you know, a couple reoccurring thorns in her side, but
Queen.
Not like Sisko and Dukat.
They literally have a fight to the death at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, one embraces the Paw Wraiths and one is like an emissary of the prophets. So I think that gives great character building that we get in Deep Space Nine.
And I think, and we can talk about Picard now, there's Picard in the room. But I think what gives all these captains a strength, and this is maybe just being obvious, but I'm going to say it anyway, because I think this is what helps Saru in this episode, is that even though he's out of time, and even out of culture with the Earth, with the humans, it's simplistic, in my opinion, you can disagree, it's simplistic what he does, but he's coming from a Federation values, and I think when you're bringing that to the table... I mean, you have to have some skills, but I think once you're coming from that place, your diplomacy almost comes naturally. That's why I would say Archer, even though he's not a trained diplomat, he's coming from Starfleet values about, you know, explore, you know, like it's
at your core, you have your values and you can build on that no matter what your skill are.
And so this is like, basically like, we're going to talk, we're not going to fight, we're going to see what common things. Like, that's the Federation value. It's not nothing complex to it.
Right.
And so when you're coming with that, instead of like, we're selfish and we want to shoot people, then that's when you get Klingons and Cardassians. And
well, even the end of episode two, where, you know, they have the pseudo fear of, oh, there's a ship. Oh, do we shoot first? And it's like, of course they're not going to shoot first. Like, they're Starfleet, even with there
Starfleet
is no
never
Starfleet.
Shoots first, which I don't know if that's.
Yeah, I know. It's weird. Yeah. I wish they didn't harp on it so much. I wish it just came naturally.
It's a very America
thing. Yes, it definitely is.
Like, it's.
I just wish it would, like, him saying all these things, I just wish it would, like, be a organic part of the story instead of feeling like he's pushing it. You know what I mean? Like, I just wish.
Right. Everyone right. should embody that.
You know, these 23rd century captains were a little more, know.
And I don't blame Saru for it.
That's
I
true.
Like, I love Saru. I just.
They had to make their own calls. They couldn't call into Starfleet every minute, right. You know, often on their own.
All
right, well, let's get into.
I think he's just great, and I don't know if I'm starting to realize that it's because I have like a lot of frustrations with the writing of Discovery. So maybe it's just Doug Jones. He's just awesome, and like it's his performance. But it's just like every time he's the guy on the screen and he's making the decisions, I'm just like, I would follow him. Like, I'll do what you want to do, man. Yeah. Like, you have that quiet sort of confidence. And you don't feel the need to be boisterous, and you're just this natural leader. He just feels like somebody you would want to follow. So I think he's great at it. So.
I think in some ways, and this is maybe me reading a lot into it, which is probably what it is, he's a young captain. I mean, literally, he is a young captain. But you know what I'm talking about. He's a young commander. I mean, I'm not talking age-wise. I'm talking experience-wise. Right. You know, because if we remember way back to season one, when, you know, he's looking up the database.
I know. I was just trying to think, like, watching a couple of, if I went back and watched, like, a handful of episodes from season one, I'm like, would I be reeling at how different Saru is back then?
But I think that he's by the book, not in a regulation way, but he's by the book, the mission statement,
like,
of the Federation.
It's a good
way.
Book, so
yeah,
let's go buy it.
And so, I mean, he's coming just from like a simple, and I don't mean that in a bad way, simple Starfleet Federation. Like I said, once you're coming from that, usually you'll go in the right direction. And so I think he knows, okay, I'm walking with my troublesome ensign in the sand. Just like I saw my captain on the Shenzhou do with Michael, you know, I know when to listen, I know when to let her talk, I know when to get back on mission. You know, it's not the most complicated thing in the world, but just doing it, though, is what makes you a leader.
Well, and then, you know, I guess the only one that's left is Kirk, you know, who often, I mean, yeah, and he obviously was a diplomat, just not in the same way that I think we would think of, like, Picard or Sisko. Like, often it was doing whatever it takes to get the mission done, you know, kind of diplomacy.
A little more paternalistic. Like, it wasn't like, what are my values that
well,
I
his,
now put on you?
Well, his loyalty to the ship, you know, you had a lot of that in the ship and the crew, and, you know, and a lot of it was, we're going to make a solution, you know, whether it's diplomatic or instead it's like, let's just teach the computer to kill itself or something like that. But
you don't teach the computer. You just confuse it.
And then I guess, you know, what makes Picard that, I mean, I know because of the reputation, but like really what makes, do you think Picard so diplomatic or what makes him do that well, in our opinion?
I think his very strict adherence to rule of law is one of the reasons that he's probably the best diplomat. His unemotionalness, he tends to remove himself, kind of like Saru did in this episode. He removes himself emotionally from the situation. It's much easier to come into, you know, a room with two people that are yelling at each other if you aren't personally invested in it. And he sort of can set the stage. He can be the voice of reason. And I think that's where he comes from. He doesn't try to come from a position of strength, but more from knowledge and experience. And I think, of course, he uses the strength. Occasionally, there's, you know, in a diplomatic situation, you'd have to. But he is the most thoughtful as well. Which requires empathetic, I suppose, as well. You need to see both sides of an issue, so.
Also think he, as much as we want to.
I was just going to think, like, similar to Saru and similar to I mean, I guess I'm saying this applies, I think, to all the captains, but they have their faith in their crew and, like, knowing that their crew is going to back them up, that's going to do what's right, they're going to accomplish the mission. Like, that gives them the ability to kind of, like, stroll across the bridge and just have that conversation, you know, with the person on the view screen, knowing that everyone behind them is ready. You know, it's like, so then they give that appearance of that calm, but you know, like, we got the teeth to back it up if we need to. You know, again, like, we often reference the Sheliak encounter and stuff, an overpowered, you know, enemy that could wipe us out, but we have to politically and legally maneuver around them. And, you know, that scene where he's just kind of walking around the bridge, like, as they're hailing him back, he's just, like, looking at the plaque, you know, looking at the lights. But yeah, Picard, that's Picard on the bridge. And then, you know, then you had Picard, like, in the courtroom, and you have, like, Drumhead and Measure of a Man, where, like, I could see him being in the JAG if he wasn't a captain. You know, he really stood for the rule of law, for Federation law.
And I think he, as much as we think of him as being very serious and uptight, I think he's very flexible. He's not, because I think there's the stereotype, which I think is wrong, but the stereotype of diplomats, like, you think a lot of TOS episode, the diplomat is always like, oh, what are you doing? Yeah. Whereas Picard, like,
We fight at them? We have to obviously be peaceful if we're going to make an agreement with these people.
Because I'm thinking of, like, and this is just a small example, but it comes to my mind, a unification. When they're on the Klingon ship, and they've got, like, the quarters that they give Data and Picard, and the Klingon captain's like, oh, I'm sure this isn't, you know, your soft bed. And Picard's, like, hitting the metal of bed. Nope, this is just fine. Just like I like it, you know. Like, in other words, you know, you gotta buck up a little bit. You know, you can roll with it. You're not going to be out.
I mean, the Klingon's jabbing at him, and he's jabbing right back. Yep. Like, it's like, I've been talking to Mr. Data about we should get beds like this on the Enterprise.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's sort of our tour of diplomacy, which is a good thing. Yeah. I think the search for the Federation, I, as we go in Discovery, I don't know. I mean, y'all know I'm a big Federation person, as far as principles, but I do worry there's a simplicity to it. That it's like, oh, we're in this post-apocalyptic world. Man, if everyone was just nice to each other, wouldn't that make a better world? I'm like, well, yes, but I mean, you got more to it than that.
Well,
I mean,
and they've reintroduced scarcity of resources, which is, yeah, you
kind
know,
of
a big game changer.
Kind of.
Well, and here's my question. Okay, oh, yeah, they're searching for the Federation, but A, are they going to like what they find? Because, I mean, so far we've met one Federation person, which is the guy on the space dock.
He was so proclaimed.
In the last episode, they'll find out the Federation was within them all along.
It's so true. But yeah,
this is just one possible future.
My second part is like, okay, if they find the Federation, then is their second mission to rebuild it? What does that mean? Conquer the galaxy?
We've got a bunch of,
like,
got a bunch
that
of
mean?
Old dudes that can't let go of the past, LARPing around. Let's rebuild society. All right, man. I guess that's what we're going to do. But
Michael becomes president of the Federation. Admiral Saru commands the fleet.
She gets her little Penn's Dance glasses like, yep, the president.
All right. Well, until next week when we journey to Trill. Darren, if folks want to talk to you about where you add your fourth pip on your uniform, where can they find you?
It's the secret hidden pip on the back, so you can't.
Can you shoot them out of your?
It's like, surprise,
face, maybe.
It's earrings. It's, you know, no one would think to look there, but they can find me on Twitter, Twitch, or Instagram at a username Dr. Sci-Fi, DrSciFi.
And Daniel, if people want to inspect your mushroom cave, where can they find you?
They could find me on Twitter at OneUpDan. That is the number one, not the word.
And if folks want to talk to me about why I'm so brilliant for someone so young, they can find me on Twitter at NCPublicServant. Well, until next week, I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Brew.
I'm Darren Moser.
Stranded here on City Alpha 3.